I'm Coulter DeVries, owner of Ranch Investor Advisory and Brokerage Services. As a former commercial and ag banker, my main reason for doing this podcast is to simply gauge the market's appetite for crowdsourcing investment in a ranch real estate fund.
The Ranch Investor Podcast, curated by subject matter experts to give you immense benefit, because we believe your time is valuable.
Dave, welcome to the Ranch Investor Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Yeah, glad to be here, my friend.
I hope you can take up the majority of time telling me about what doctors do with their money as we also get into retirement, succession planning, estate planning. That's a big issue in farm and ranch right now.
What
you've seen some of your clients do. You're a certified financial advisor. You do some small business deals on your own outside of your CFA services. You do some land flipping. You've got some experience all around that I'm glad to have you on. You can share that with our audience. We do need to get into tax reduction planning, retirement income, some of the family wealth planning and estate planning, because the question comes up quite often, Dave, is what do our counterparts in the urban areas do with all their money? What do doctors do with their money? What do lawyers do with their money? And so that as we have an aging population in farm and ranch, the average farmer and rancher is over 65 years old, and they've got immense equity, immense wealth and assets. And there is a big push to educate. And I hate using that word because it sounds like pompous when they're like, you need to educate yourself. Like, I'm going to give you an education. I hate using that word, but bring information. How about that? There's a huge push to bring information to farmers and ranchers when it comes to managing investments, financial advising, estate planning, retirement planning. Launch in, Dave, give me your background and then help me take over from here so I can give this voice a rest.
Yeah, you bet, Coulter. Well, I think, you know, as I think about ranchers and farmers, and we have some of those kind of clientele in my financial planning business. We deal with them in our land flipping business that we do there. You know, I think about that group, and I mean, these people are the salt of the earth. You know, regular folks, you know, they're to me the ideal person because they have a lot of wealth, but you would never know it if you talk to them, right? At least the majority of folks that are in that position. You know, many farmers in particular, man, you think about going through COVID and what happened. I mean, that was like getting smacked in the face, right? Where you were planning on selling all these crops and you have to go let it rot in the fields for a while. And you're often land rich and cash poor. And doctors and many of the small business owners, people like that I often deal with in the financial planning, they're kind of the opposite, right? They tend to be more cash heavy and cash assets, maybe a good deal of real estate, but certainly it's a smaller portion of their net worth than ranchers and farmers and those kinds of people. Which, what do most of us do that are ranchers and farmers? We go out and buy more land, right? You know, so because we know it, we understand it, we can, to a degree, right, work with it. And we know that if we plant corn, plant soybeans, plant wheat, whatever, what that yield might look like, what cash flow might look like. Not that we're guaranteed it, but at least we have an idea of it. So for me, a little bit about my background. So I've been in the financial planning space for 20 plus years now at this particular point. So I'm 42 to give everyone context in terms of who I am. Originally from Southern California, although I have roots in the farm world, in Manchester, Washington, which is across the water from Seattle. We have an old family farm that was there, which has been over the years gotten to smaller and smaller and smaller chunks to now it's left to the old Victorian style farmhouse on the water with a couple acres of land there still on the water, which is awesome. So that I come from cool. That stock. Yeah, it's on Denniston Lane. My last name is Denniston. So the family lane, you know, is still there and probably point to that and my heritage. And as I look at my family and how I was raised, you know, work ethic was incredibly important, and treating people honorably and fairly was important. And the value of real estate was something that I was brought up with that was incredibly important. My folks are real estate investors. My great aunt and uncle did well in real estate. And it's part of, as I've evolved as a person, you know, real estate, land, farming, those kinds of things have appealed to me more and more and more. If someone was to look at this video, I'm wearing a collared shirt right now. You know, I don't look the part. I look like a white collar guy, which of course I have a big chunk of that in me. But I look at how I started out 20 years ago, right? Think about when I started in this industry. You know, the internet was definitely here. We were just getting past dial-up and all the good old AOL stuff, and cell phones evolved, and you know, life has been moving so quickly. I know many farmers now, right? I mean, you can do so much more with machines and computers and GPS coordinates and telling tractors and whatnot where to go and how to do it without having to do all of the work. And it's so much of a different world in out here today. So for me, in my journey, I grew up in California, went to school in Seattle. And I've been a small business owner basically since I got out of college. So originally I went in my first year in financial planning, I knocked on 2,000 doors to try and get clients in the snow, in the wind, in the rain, in beautiful sunshiny weather. And I thought I was a pretty smart guy, but I'll tell you, man, that humbled the heck out of me in going through that process. And then
That's hard work, like farming and ranching, knocking on doors and building your book right out of college.
Oh yeah. No, you definitely grow to appreciate an office and growing up, you know, and earning my stripes in the industry. And so ended up working for another guy and got to a point where my great aunt had passed away, received some money. We had no debt on our house, on anything. You know, we owned it all, which is the way I always wanted to live. But then I got to a space in my career where I wanted to make an acquisition. And so just like many farmers and ranchers, in this case, I acquired financial planning clients. And so rather than trying to grow it all organically, right, I go out and make an acquisition to try and speed up the process. And unfortunately, the closing date of that was August 1st, 2008, which was awesome. Fantastic timing.
Oh, that is, my listeners, they get tired of me saying it, but I have impeccable timing like that as well, Dave.
What happened with you, Coulter?
I timed the cattle market exactly wrong. Immediately, much like the 08 financial markets and real estate, they dropped 40%. So did the cattle market in 2015, which I have a listener who told me he's heard it enough. And so I won't go into it any further, Dave.
Love it, man. Yeah. So we go through this process where I literally had no debt, no nothing. Now all of a sudden I had all this debt after this acquisition. And I'm sure many people listening to this can relate to that as you buy a new piece of land and it didn't work out the way that you thought it would. And I'm now just clawing and scraping to get my way back up. And I feel like I earned my inheritance in that time period, right? You know, it was handed to me. I didn't blow it, but I invested it. And man, it was hell to get back through that. But we made it through that time period. And I swore at that particular time, I was never, ever going to be dependent again on one thing, which is what led me to multiple streams of income and doing different things, including the land flipping that I'm doing today. Which kind of brought me back full circle to my family and how the family grew up and I was raised. And it's been a beautiful but difficult journey. Along the way, by the way, had two beautiful children. My wife and I have been married 20 plus years now. My oldest is in college. And my youngest is our little miracle girl. She was less than a pound when she was born. Literally 12.4 ounces.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
And she was super early, 23 weeks gestationally. So 17 weeks earlier than she should have been. And it's been a journey getting through that. And that's part of the reason why I focus on doctors. I'm giving back. So if you ever listen to my podcast, The Freedom Formula for Physicians, that's me just giving back to the physician community. You know, it's been a passion project for the last 7-8 years or so. So,
well, my wife is she's a PA. And as many ranchers have joked with me, so I lost my ass ranching once before. The joke is I was a broke rancher, therefore I had to become a ranch broker. And now they all, my friends say, well, your wife's a PA. Now you can go back to ranching, because behind every good rancher is a wife with a town job, and she has an exceptionally good town job. Which means I could be a great rancher with her off-farm income.
Man, because it's so variable, right? I mean, it's you're investing all the time with ranching, whether cows or horses or whatever, and having to decide what stock do you sell, what stock do you buy, all that kind of thing.
And what freedom, what was the podcast one more time?
The Freedom Formula for Physicians is the
Freedom
title.
Formula for Physicians.
Yes.
Well, thanks for coming on, because it is, I do want to get into that. Is one question I had, and I actually want to jump right into a tangent, because you and I have this similar story about not so impeccable timing.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on where we're at today? Are we overvalued on real estate and equities? Is there cause to be skeptical right now?
Well, there's always cause to be skeptical, Coulter. There's no doubt about it, right? You know, I get this question all the time, every year, multiple times of the year. It doesn't matter the year. But yes, there are concerns, right? You know, I think with a lot of different things, whether stocks or real estate or bonds, you know, there's really, except the money in the bank. You know, now you can actually earn money in the bank for the first time in a decade, actually more like 20 years. You know, you can earn 5% on your safe money, which is incredible considering that we've been making 0 to 1% for like 15 years out of that 20. So it's a much different environment than a couple of years ago in terms of paper assets like stocks, bonds, mutual funds, in terms of real estate. I literally, right before we got on this call, I was having a guest on my podcast. We were talking about real estate, and in particular, multifamily and office and self-storage. And we're talking about how so many operators had got floating rate debt in 2019, 2018, 2020, and that floating rate debt might have been locked in for 5 to 7 years. Well, here we are now, right? Starting 2024, 2025, 2026, 2027, we're going to start to see, you know, who's naked underneath their coat, right? You know, it's going to be really interesting to see how the next couple of years play out. Of course, there's all the crazy geopolitical stuff that something always seems to be happening, but this feels a little scarier, right? You got Russia and Putin with their finger on the nuclear devices. That's the threat. That's scary of it. We got stuff going on in Israel and Palestine, and there's that feeling of, gosh, is World War III across the next year coming to us? On the other hand, I would point out with savings rates, you know, now getting nice yields on investments, like we're seeing rates, like I said, we haven't been seeing in 15, 20 years. And there's a lot more of an attraction now to the safer stuff. On the other hand, employment, you look at the economy, there's been talk of recession ever since COVID started, which we had a little bit of a recession, but then bam, the government throws down helicopters worth of money. And things kept chugging along. And here we are today, job market's still growing. I'm not saying it's easy. but there's still jobs being created every month across all kinds of industries. There's no negative GDP even in sight in terms of gross domestic product, the economy, right? We're not in a recession. We're not close to a recession. The Fed is now put the brakes on raising rates, or at least pumping the brakes to not be raising by 0.75%, which means all of us, for you and me and everyone else, that means our borrowing costs. Okay, we can more know, hey, if we want to take out some debt to invest in our businesses, we have a better idea of what that's going to be, right? So that there's some of these unknowns that have become knowns in the economy. So I'm cautiously optimistic is how I would say it. I think you look at this last year, for example, tech stocks, oh my God, they have been screaming. If you look at the big tech stocks, they're up like 40 to 50% for this year. Now, if you look at everything else outside of tech, like you look at consumer goods, companies, just think of things you'd buy at the grocery store, laundry detergent, soda, stuff like that. Those are down this year. Utilities, big publicly traded power companies are down this year. There's a list of about energy, oil companies are down this year by 5 or 6%. So certain sectors are getting hit harder. Well, guess what? I'll bet you next year that whole light's going to flip and tech probably won't be doing as well. And maybe some of these other things will start doing better. So those are some of the things that I'm looking at. I'm talking about, I think a lot of the dividend stocks have gotten hit, you know, much better for dividends, for example. Now you have higher yields because interest rates have gotten higher. So I think there's some really attractive stuff out there, but yes, there are risks. There are things to be concerned with, things to keep an eye on, like commercial real estate, for example, how that impacts banks. You know, you think of a lot of banks that might loan farmers and ranchers money. Well, they might be pulling back. They might be asking people to put more cash into deals than they used to, you know, all that kind of stuff. What are you seeing on your end?
That's right. And actually, we like to say, and I'm going to preface this by saying I'm not just putting my sales spin. You know, everything is spin cycled when you're a salesman, a broker. But the World War III analogy, in private conversations, I guess I am going to blast it and broadcast it right now, but that's good for my business. Rural real estate and a stable farmland producing United States domestic food production, global instability, supply chains, war overseas. I don't have the data to support this. I'll flat out say, I don't know what the correlation is, but I presume that it's good for my business. World War III is, and that's, you know, that's a very Machiavellian thing to say. I'm not wanting rockets flying over Israel and Palestine. I don't personally value that and want that. And I don't want that in the Ukraine either. So I think the long-term outlook, yes, there is a lot of uncertainty and skepticism, even in these safe, quote unquote, safe assets of farmland. Which banks are, yes, now you're going to have to come with more equity, more down payment. The debt service coverage ratio doesn't look as good as it used to, especially when commodities were at a peak. They were very high. And volatility, high prices means high volatility, means expensive options, because the probability, the possibility of your expected income dropping by half, that probability is now increasing. That's more expensive in the marketplace. All of that being said, I think land is going to do what it's always done, just slow and steady. Yeah, we've had some bubbles, you know, in Minnesota, North Dakota, you see some record-setting farmland prices, $19,000 an acre, which is about $10,000 higher than the farmer next door wants it to be if he's buying, but he's also sitting on that same land that just went up that much.
Yeah.
It's full of paradoxes. What I'm curious though is economics is the movement of resources from areas of low yielding to high yielding. And I had the listeners can attest that there was a gentleman who was on my podcast a couple of weeks ago who beat me up pretty severely over the annual yield on farmland and ranch land. Because apples for apples, farm and ranch, especially ranch, is lower than farm. Farm is like 2.5-3% gross annual yield. Ranch is half of that. And he's like, boy, that's horrible, Coulter. That is, he's like, I can get commercial real estate with 8%, 8 cap annual yield, and then a 3-year IRR of 14%. And your 3-year IRR is 6% with a 1 cap. He's like, that's just horrible. And why would anyone invest in farm and ranch? And what I tried, I didn't get a chance to say, well, it's risk adjusted. It would be considered core real estate. It's not value add. It's not fix and flip. It's not distressed. It's core real estate. And it's about as core as it gets. So that's my rebuttal to Adam coming on here and beating me up the other week. What are your thoughts though on core versus value add, class C office space? I keep hearing that this is gonna, like you said, the variable interest rate loans and the flight of capital to other areas. We keep waiting for this commercial real estate crash. I haven't seen it yet.
No, what? I believe it's probably still another year or two out, if not three, because what's happening behind the scenes, everything that I read and people I talk to is right now banks are trying to work out that stuff with the current owners, right? You know, they're trying to make it work. So whether someone's getting mezzanine loans or some sort of fill-in thing to have it, where at the same time you're getting dropping yields. So your friend who was talking about, hey, buying something with cash, right? You're coming in, you're doing something with it, is so much different than someone that already holds the real estate. And they're going to try and hold on as long as possible, right? Before they finish with it. And even if they do foreclose or whatever, I mean, that's a long process. That is not particularly multi-millions of dollars buildings. I mean, we're not talking about a $500,000 home here. You're talking about millions of dollars, you know, probably, let's just say a minimum of 2 or 3 in a C type building, you know, but it might be 5 or 10 or 15 or 20, you know, depending upon the building, which those aren't big buildings here in Minnesota. I mean, you have some deals like that, but that have happened. I think in terms of ranchers and farmers and those types, I think the main mistake, in my opinion, that they make is putting too many eggs in that one basket. Whether it's a certain crop, I think the best farmers, right, they're diversified. They'll have greenhouses, they'll have different kinds of crops and things that they have going on, and they're testing new things, as opposed to someone that they're just in soybean and corn, right? That's not diversified. If corn craters, you're screwed, you know. So you might be counting on a yield of 1 or 2%, but it may not be less than that potentially. Now, we do know that there's been a lot of foreign buying. You hear a lot of Bill Gates and what's happening there. So just like in office buildings, right, you got C class, B class, A class. I mean, think of ranching and farming the same way, right? There's different qualities of it. You have a place that has water running by it. That's what Bill Gates has been buying up, from what I understand. You probably know better than I do, you know, because he wants the water rights. That stuff is probably going to stay at a premium. You have something that's farther away from water. Well, then, you know, your land probably isn't worth as much and could be more volatile because it's not the class A type in that. I think we can all agree. I mean, generally farmland, if you look at the last 20 years has gone up a ton, right? I mean, it has appreciated significantly because of people like Bill Gates, other billionaires buying ranches and farms, the Chinese coming in, trying to acquire different things. It is a volatile asset class. You know, at the end of the day, it can go up a lot, it can go down a lot because it depends upon the crops that are being yielded and what you can do with it and all that kind of thing. At least that's my take on it from what I see. Am I off base on that or no?
Well, I want to get your thoughts on this. I think the paradigm shift, my parents' generation believed you have to own the land. And your goal was to just buy and buy and buy, accumulate more land. You farm and ranch what you own, and your goal is to own more. I think Gen X might be changing a little more where they're going to say, all right, I will own 25%, lease 75%. And as land, that cash on cash annual yield for ranches approaches zero, essentially. As that happens, I think more people are inclined to say, look, I'll separate off the land investment entity and I'll transfer that risk to someone else. Someone else who needs the portfolio benefits of low risk, low return, like Bill Gates. I'm not going to defend Bill Gates, but the initial thesis for him was, what can I buy to offset all this Microsoft stock? What is the exact opposite of Microsoft stock? And it was farmland. That's the story. The other people believe there might be ulterior motives there. But the younger generations, I want to say, are going to be growing their operating entity at profit margins of 30%. They're going to have the landowning entity. Someone else can bear that risk. And someone else needs that portfolio diversification. So what we're seeing today, talking about your clients, doctors, and some of the more urban investors, is because these cap rates, these yields on rural land, farm ranch, are getting so low, institutions are no longer players for direct ownership. But yet, since financing rates have gone up so high, we're seeing a flip in that you don't want to own land, you want to own the debt on the land. And I'm with them. I would much rather own a 5-year loan on a apartment building at 9% than own the apartment building for the next 5 years.
I think that's part of the diversification I was referring to earlier, right? Like if you look at my land flipping business and what I do there, we do a lot of owner financing, different size properties, different types of properties, you know, and I have all these streams of income that are diverse. I'm not tied to one thing or one person. And then on top of that, I run some masterminds and stuff for other land investors that are like me. It's another stream of income to add to what I have. The same is true, I think, with farming and ranching. Beyond the kind of crops or the kind of livestock that you may have, I think playing the debt side to invest your money into is incredibly important. There are many land investors, or a few land investors out there now, for example, that teach a lot about subdividing. You know, maybe you should look at land banking, for example, if you're a rancher or whatever. Take some of that asset and start dividing it out. Maybe you could look at owner financing some of it to create streams of income for yourself. You know, there's so many ways within that vertical to make money and do different things with it. You could still stay tied to land if you want to, but just being a land holder, as you're saying, I think isn't the wisest financial idea. It should be part of it, no doubt. That should be a part of what I think a lot of people do. You know, real estate, farming, whatever, that should be a part of someone's overall portfolio of having a long-term real estate asset. But you should have different streams of income coming in. So if one thing isn't working, hey, you still have this other asset that is working for you.
And, you know, one thing that has affected you'll probably start seeing this in the news clippings, the headlines. What we're seeing is, yeah, those 5.5% CDs right now, people would much rather put their money into a CD than a ranch that appreciates at 5.5% annually. People are just saying, look, the appreciation rate, the risk-free rate, they're equal right now. So I would, given the opportunity for risk-free or appreciation, I would rather go with risk-free, and it's more liquid.
Totally.
That's tough for me to compete with right now.
That's tough. But I think, how much would you say ranches have appreciated by, for example, in the last 15 years, 20 years?
Oh, it's even so 20 years, even taking into account the craziness of 2021, you're still annualized CAGR is going to be 6 to 9%, 5 to 8%, 6 to 9%, right around there, depending on certain areas.
So yeah, certainly different assets, different locations, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's no doubt that that's really attractive. Plus, it's liquid when you have money in the bank and you're able to make 5 to 6%, and you have the backing of the U.S. government, which some people might argue isn't great, but you know, most people I think would think that that's a good thing. However, at the same token, that ain't going to be guaranteed that way forever, right? That's for right now, this period in time. If you look 2 years ago, you weren't getting that. You weren't getting anywhere close to that.
Right.
So you're not locked into that rate for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. So if you want to get a sustainable, nice rate of return, I would suggest that's not the place for that. Short term, absolutely. Next year or two, if there is a recession, guess what? Those rates will drop. And then it's not going to look so attractive anymore. Maybe they go up a little bit in between now and then. I don't know. But what I do know is that I wouldn't want to put all my eggs in that basket either, right? I think I have some money there. I have $150,000 sitting in money market right now. Me, as a financial advisor, land flipper, of course, I have my stock portfolio. I have other things that are more aggressive. I have my land flipping. You know, it's just all part of the bigger picture. So if someone has, let's say, a net worth of $10 million and you have $500K in safe stuff, I think that's a great idea. If you have $5 million in it, that's probably not such a good idea, right? Because in the long term, generally, those rates match inflation, meaning or might even lose to inflation. So, you know, it's like being invested in gold. Generally, it matches inflation, but you don't have the liquidity that you do in bank accounts. So that's my take on it is, yes, those rates look extremely attractive, but things like farms, ranches, land, you know, if you're playing the asset multiple ways like we're talking about, that's the way to do it. Do the debt side, do the equity side, do subdivides, do owner financing on some lots to generate income for yourself. You know, all that stuff I think is good and strong to do.
So that would be one, it's kind of like you're being gentle with your client right now is what I hear. Rather than saying you need to diversify, get into mini storage and triple net AutoZone or a Walgreens property, commercial real estate, class C, class A, you know, you need to diversify. you're kind of saying, well, your comfort zone is obviously farm and ranch. You're highly concentrated. Is there a way to diversify within that asset?
Right. Totally. And the reason I feel strongly about that, and I think, you know, there's advantages in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, the kind of stuff I do as a financial advisor. There's tax benefits that you can get from those kinds of things that you can't get from raw land and farming and whatnot. But on the other hand, I'm not going to make a leopard be able to change its spots, right? So, and the reality is there's a lot of wealth and value in farming and ranching and stuff like that. So there are other advisors that would say, oh, you need to have 50% of your money in stocks. Well, I don't agree with that. You know, if someone got this far and has a portfolio of 5 to 10 million bucks, who am I to argue with them on where their money should be? They've done well with what they have, you know. And particularly too, I know for me, and the reason I got into land flipping is I didn't want to just hand over my hard-earned money to somebody else. I wanted to dig in it, get in it, get my hands dirty, and run a business that helped me be able to have some measure of control over where the money's being invested, how it's going. And that's not for everybody. There's plenty of people out there that run syndications that for many busy doctors, they do get into, whether it's the things that you mentioned, self-storage or multifamily or whatever. And here's the reality is many of those things have an incredibly high amount of fees because you're paying someone else for your time, right? And so if you can spend some of your own time to do this stuff, then you're making that much more money rather than paying it to someone else. And I say this as a financial advisor, getting paid by other people to manage their money. And reality is those people that I generally work with, they don't understand it. They might read about it some, they might have some degree of understanding, but they don't care about it. They care about it, but they don't like it. They don't enjoy it. And so I step in to help people save the time and not have to think about it as much. So that way they know, hey, someone's on their side. They can bounce ideas off of me. We talk about taxes. We talk about investments. We talk about all that kind of stuff. But for someone, I think that has an established portfolio, yes, some diversification is good, but you shouldn't be invested in 30 things because how are you going to keep your eye on 30 different things and know one person from another when you've handed your money off to 30 different people that are running syndications and convincing you they're the best thing since sliced bread, which in fact, I think you're going to see more and more of the emperor walking around with no clothes on, right? On some of these people that were highly leveraged and now they have these debts that are coming up where they're going to have to pay a lot more in interest and the cash flow ain't going to be there to support the thing. So.
Well, you hit on something. I'm actually working on a syndication for ranch investing. But one thing that in my research, you go to Bigger Pockets forum, some of these real estate investing communities. And yeah, a lot of those people, they don't like syndications. They don't like crowdfunding platforms. They believe it's too high feed. They don't like investing with someone they don't know. And that's understandable because actually a lot of these people on these forums are professionals themselves. So they have a different opportunity cost. They have a different skill set. They don't need to pay someone else for someone else's time and expertise and experience. And I get that. For the average person, I'm happy to pay my financial advisor $4,500 a year or whatever it is because I think he balances me. I can be impulsive and he's kind of like an insurance policy. He's there to check me before I wreck me. So I think when it comes to syndications, there is, if you don't have the experience and the expertise and the time, yeah, the high fees, the relationship would be one tough one to get over. But I do want to hear more about your mastermind group and this land flipping. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So, basically we have the land flipping community is small. I'm sure in the same way, you know, ranching, I mean, a lot of the people know each other, right? You know, particularly in certain states or whatever. In this case, nationally, even internationally, there's a lot of people that have gotten into buying and selling raw vacant land. And I was the kind of person, I never wanted to come up with a course because it takes so much time to do it. and then you have to maintain it. But there are people that have had them. I didn't want to do like a high level coaching thing because I know the time and effort that goes into that. You have to usually do what we're doing right here of having another podcast, you know, having funnels, doing ads, all this stuff that took time, which I love being a financial advisor. And I didn't want to give that up on top of doing the land flipping, but I loved meeting with people. So I basically, for free, started getting groups of people together, 7 to 10. We would meet for 2 days and really just spend deep time with one another of hanging out, sharing, breaking bread together, sharing ideas, you know, just having an environment where people know they're not going to get sold something, that we're truly all there to help one another. And at the time I wasn't charging for it, so I had no financial incentive to do it. It was all about building relationships. And so finally this last year, I started doing some paid events, which I've been playing with some of the price points and whatnot. But to give you an idea, we have a 50 person event here in May. The one for 2024 sold out within a week of that one closing. So I guess we must have been doing something well. We have one going to Puerto Rico with a group of 10 of us all together in January. Possibly we're doing Italy next October. So we're seeing some cool places and I get to have great relationships, make a little bit of money, but it's nothing compared to my usual businesses. I just do it for the relationships and the passion and really having the opportunity to get to know people. I love talking about business and land and markets and all that stuff. And so it feeds my soul. And it's been a lot of fun. It's really meant for experienced people, not new people. You know, this is not for someone just wanting to get into the business. There's plenty of other people that have courses and coaching programs that I certainly don't do. I'd highly recommend several people out to folks that are interested in getting going. This is really meant for people that are buying and selling land regularly.
Is there a website for that? I want you to plug your CFA, your financial advising website, as well.
Yeah.
If you have the mastermind out there or a community or a group, social media group.
Yeah, actually, I don't have a social media group specifically for it. I do have a website that, to be honest with you, I can't remember if we took it down or not because we had our last event and it sold out. Landunconference.com is the website. So I think it's down right this second, actually, because we don't have any events are already sold out that we have, except the Italy one that's coming up next October. But if people want to check it out, one of my partners in that event space is Seth Williams from RE Tipster. So Seth is an amazing, awesome man of God, good guy, and very trustworthy dude. And he has courses. He doesn't do coaching, but he does courses and has a ton of YouTube videos all on the space, including one of the event is on Seth's YouTube channel. So of the last event that we
had. What is his again, Seth? And
RE Tipster. For real estate tipster, retipster.com.
Okay, and that's Seth who again?
Seth Williams.
Williams. Okay, and are you two at all personalities where there's a LinkedIn or a X thread that people can follow you and
you get
your daily update?
I don't do that stuff, you know. Oh. But I'm certainly, people could go to my website. I do have a Facebook account for Dave Denniston CFA is where someone could follow on social media. I don't like post stuff daily. I do a lot of family photos and, you know, there's some good financial things on there. Certainly my podcast is a great way to keep up with me, which you could go to drfreedompodcast.com. I usually put out a new podcast every week, and which I talk about all these different things that we're talking about today, which you can do, search for Freedom Formula for Physicians or drfreedompodcast.com to go check that out.
Dave, I'm going to be straightforward with you. It's going to be very difficult to get my wife to change from true crime podcasts to the Dr. Financial Freedom podcast. She She does like those true crime ones.
You know, it's those are better. I'll be honest. My podcast is fun and educational, but it's not as good as true crime. So, you know, I can't compete. I can't compete. My wife doesn't even listen to my podcast. So, you know, I'm not offended. It's all right.
Yeah, no, she'll never hear mine. That's why I can reference her and not take shit at home for it.
That's right.
Well, you have a beautiful family in the background. And for anyone who's interested, definitely reach out to Dave on the website, davedeniston.com, the podcast, if you'd like to hear more. And is this mastermind group, is this predominantly your network within Minnesota or is it national?
No, it's national. No, okay. Literally people from all over the country, even the world, are kind of part of it. Mostly US, of course, but there's some people in the Philippines, some people in Italy that are doing land flipping in the United States that are part of my list, if you will, of other land investors. So yeah.
Well, Dave, appreciate you coming on the Ranch Investor podcast and bearing with me as I struggle through losing my voice this week, but this has been good. Man, you've hit on some good things and I think people are going to have questions, and I encourage everyone to whatever platform they're using, social media, go ahead and shoot us your questions. And if they're straight to Dave, I can try to relay them, but we definitely like to hear your feedback. So please give us good, bad, otherwise feedback on any social media or Discord channel we have.
Love it. Thank you, Coulter. Thank you for having me.
Listeners of the Ranch Investor Podcast who are receiving this immense value for free, thanks for tuning in. I do have an ask in place of advertising. I do not monetize this on Spotify, Apple, anywhere. I don't click the monetize button. So I do have to get a plug in here, and I ask, what I'd like from you is to hear some feedback. So on our social media, please share this episode. All I ask in return for not having promotions and advertising is that you share this, send a text, get it out there so more people can enjoy what we're producing. Thanks for tuning in.
We feature only the best accredited and established rural real estate professionals who analyze, transact, and manage billions of dollars annually. No newbies here. Click subscribe on your streaming platform so you know when the latest episode has dropped.